What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast today, we bring on Chris Sevier, PE teacher, long-term athletic development specialist, MS in kinesiology. What an expert. Chris, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Greg. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I always laugh when I say someone's an expert because they really are. But most of the time, I feel like the experts feel like, yeah, I'm just a normal person who's maybe looked at this longer. What does it feel like just being called an expert? Because I still freak out when people are like, oh, yeah, he's a Hockey IQ expert.
Yeah, I think I do it every day. I teach kids. I literally teach kids every single day. And then I go coach. And then people ask me questions. And I'm like, this is not very difficult for me. Like, I can step, I've coached 4-year-old soccer all the way up to high school soccer and high school hockey. So it's pretty easy for me. But I guess it is kind of fun to be called an expert. And, you know, I can step in and coach pretty much anything I want sometimes.
Yeah, and you've obviously got a holistic picture on long-term athletic development. Obviously, you've gone from K all the way up to 12. I'm curious, from your perspective, like, you probably were thinking in kindergarten and those younger ages, like, oh, man, look at all of these great players. They're going to be fantastic later. But maybe or maybe not that those were the ones that ended up going the furthest and playing at the highest levels.
Yeah, it's super interesting to see the kids kind of grow up through kindergarten. I've had 12 years I've been in my current school. So I've had kids from kindergarten to, or I guess about 12th grade now. So I've seen the kids go from being little to being a Division I athlete now, at least a couple of them. And it's a really interesting thing when you see the kids who are standouts, who are traveling at 8, 9, they're playing on all these elite teams. And all of a sudden they're not the kids who are on the varsity team in high school. They're not playing a big role. They're not playing in college, or even they're not playing anymore at 13 or 14. So that's been super interesting. And then having my own kids and seeing them through that lens of kind of what I don't want them to go through, and kind of, I don't want to jump into this seriousness, is really what led me down the road of learning about long-term athletic development and how I can do what's best for my own kids and the kids that I teach and coach.
So basically the ones you're saying, like 8, 9, that are doing all this work and probably even a little bit later as well, they're the ones that are burning out. Is it usually seem like a loss of passion, or what do you think is the cause? Is it physical wearing and tearing? You know, the brain just kind of gets sick of seeing the same thing over and over again. What if you had to make a guess?
I think it's a combination of all of those things. I've seen kids who have adult injuries in 4th and 5th grade, and I've seen kids who are under so much pressure from their parents that even at school, they're a mess. Like, they just want to hang out with their friends and have fun, but it is hockey. I have a couple of hockey players, but it's hockey or baseball all the time. And I think that weighs on them. And then they hit 13, 14 and that's it. And I have a kid right now who, I guess he'll be a 9th grader, but he was a soccer player and he had that pressure his whole elementary school career. I mean, he was soccer, traveling. His parents have probably spent thousands and thousands of dollars. And he is, as a freshman, he has quit soccer altogether and he's playing football. So just wants to play with his friends. And I mean, it's hard to see, but I understand it when I see how serious they get.
I feel like eventually we all just want to play with our friends. I mean, I'm in a doll league and I just want to play with my friends, but it's just a matter of when that is. And there's some people, you know, who obviously want to take it super serious and be great, but it from my experience, has to come from the kid. Like, if any external force, like, you can kind of help and guide, but realistically, it almost always does more harm than good. And that's I think it's true across the board and all of the people I've talked with, whether it be on the podcast officially or unofficial, all over the places, the player needs to be the one driving the bus. And I'm curious from your perspective, I know you're big into creating great environments. And I know with Akron, we were trying to find ways to create learning opportunities and leadership opportunities for players to take that ownership. I feel like that's a big driving factor and force. So I'm curious, what's your perspective on that?
So when we are creating environments, so I've been running Learn to Play, Learn to Skate, a house league, and coaching my kids for the last few years, and getting people on board with the environment is more important than whatever you're saying out of your mouth. Is it's a challenge, but like, if we want to give the players some ownership, we want to let them know what they want to do, or they want to let us know what they want to do, and then putting them in those situations where they're going to learn and it's going to be fun. Like, my biggest thing is like, it's got to be fun, and I can't make them love it, but I can definitely make them hate it. So I try to we try to have as much fun as possible. I try to ask myself every time I bring up a drill or a game, it's how can I make this more simple, or how can I make this more fun? And that the kids are begging to come back when they leave. So that's kind of my kind of philosophy around that is we can learn through fun, and we probably learn more through fun than we do through just, I guess a lot of coaches like to call it work, especially when you're younger, but just making sure that I bring that fun every time we come and that they are learning is super important to me.
I love the one line you just used. Like, I can't make them love it, but I can make them hate it. Like, oh, that's about as true as it comes right there. And even you've seen recently some coaches in the NHL are like, I just want my players to want to come to the rink, enjoy being around the rink. And the ones that have done it and had that approach have seen success. I mean, Buffalo with Don Granato, what a turnaround for years of terrible coaching there. That's been one. Marty St. Louis in a similar boat. Like the coaches that understand that we don't have to work and then, you know, get the meat and vegetables, and then we suddenly bring in, you know, a small area game, and that solves all. Like, it reminds me of the baseball game. Like, it's the worst baseball game ever, but that ninth inning, it makes everyone realize like, oh, this might have been a great game. And really, it's terrible. It's just a one run game at the end, and suddenly there's some excitement, but realistically it was awful, and no one enjoys that. And it's kind of the right. Same with you know, players and practice environments. So I love that. Like, I can't make them love it, but I can make them hate it. That's awesome.
Oh, for sure. I have to remind myself that with my own kids more than anyone else is
we got to remember to have fun yourself too.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I don't know how many times I have to ask, which is like, you know, this is supposed to be fun, right? And you should be having fun. And half the time they're all stressed out. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's the opposite of what we wanted for our kids. And yet it's acceptable for us. I'm not sure that's exactly what the kids are seeing it often, especially at the younger ages. They're more mimicking what they see. And if they're stressed and burning out, you know, that's probably come directly from the kids or parents.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's dive into basically the idea of creating the environment. You know, we're now learning a lot more through play. You know, how can we help kids by creating a great environment? And then also, it could be framing mistakes better, or just not acknowledging that they're mistakes and letting the learning happening. Because half the time, learning is just seeing mistakes, having a bit of reflection, and pushing forward. And, you know, a lot of coaches, the best thing you can ever do is just ask a question and build reflection. So that was a long question, but basically start from the area of like creating the environment and then working to like, how do we help these kids, not by maybe yelling or telling, but asking, which is the natural flow of things as a coach.
Yeah, for sure. So when it comes to creating the environment, I tried my best, like I said, to make it fun, but also like representative. So I've stolen a lot of stuff from soccer, and there's a lot of research in soccer and about play and mistakes and how great players are born and how they are raised and how they train, and most of it's learned in play. And so letting the kids, they see the mistake right away anyway. So we turn the puck over and it ends up in the back of our net. They get, I mean, it's there. The mistake is there. They don't need me to say, hey, you just turned the puck over and now it's in your net. So what can we do next time? What are your options? I like that one. What did you see there? I like that one too. Sometimes they'll come off, or I'll say, hey, what did you see? Or what were you thinking? Or not like in a mean way, what were you thinking? But like what, you know, it is anything that's going to get them to think. So my kids had a first grade teacher that always tell them, use your brain, not mine. So I would always tell the kids, I want to hear from your brain, not from mine. Like, the answer for me doesn't matter. You're the one that has to go out there and do it. So I always tell them, is it from your brain? You're not going to get it from mine. So that's a big one for me.
Love that reflective state. Just like, what did you see? I've talked to a few people that have stopped using the question that starts with why this, because it usually seems, you know, like an accusation more than anything.
Right.
And it just framing, like, I love the line, you know, what was your read there? What were you thinking? Not as good on the second, really good on the first. And just having that idea of like, talk me through what you just did there. Oh, fantastic. I have had better conversations and more open, receptive players than any other time in my career. It's awesome.
For sure. And kids are really, they're really cagey at first when you start to ask those questions, because so many coaches, or maybe their perception of so many coaches, is that the coach is going to jump in and he's going to tell me exactly what to do and exactly what I did wrong and exactly what I should do next time. And then they're a little bit like I said, they're a little cagey about, what do I say? Like, is he trying to trick me? Like no. And I'm like, no, like genuinely, like what did, and then sometimes it's just like, they'll tell me and I'm like, I get it. Like, I didn't work out this time, but you know, it was the right idea and the right thought. And then it's like, then we just move on. And so, yeah, but after a while they kind of get comfortable. Once they get comfortable with you, and then they're really open to the point where they almost sometimes talk too much. Like, all right, it's raining in a little bit here.
That's hilarious. That's my experience always as a coach. Cause I always come with the idea of like, I just want to understand like where the players are, what they're thinking. Cause at the end of the day, they're the ones making the decisions on the playing surface. And yeah, every single time it's like looking around, like, is this guy being genuine or is he just finding a way to get at me? And it's like, just trying to understand you a little bit better. It's kind of important to understand your players and your people. I mean, I don't know any other way to go about it. If someone has a better way, please help me out. Make me a better coach. I'm open to this, but it's the best way that I've seen. And it's once you get through that initial phase of shock and awe, and the same thing is like when I come into a coaching situation where I don't use a whiteboard and I try to minimize whistles, like that's also a shock. Like players actually have to look at their teammates and like, oh, is this person ready? You know, wow, what a game changer. But it's so simple. Once you start utilizing it and kids start picking up on it, I mean, that's learning and growth in itself. It's just one more thing that you don't have to do, but actually by not doing it, you're a better coach and you're better actively creating an environment that leads to great growth, development, and kids wanting to come back and play.
Yeah. I think when I have some 14U, 16U, AA, AAA kids that I work with, and they're like so perceptive of stuff that happens in their games. And like, I can ask them, we'll do it. We'll play a game or do a drill or whatever. And I'll ask them, hey, what do you think of this? And sometimes, and they're comfortable enough sometimes to say like, I'm not a fan. And then sometimes they're like, hey, this happened. What can we work on this? And like, that makes things not only easier on me, but like, I think it's way more helpful for them, just for them to bring that to me every time we work together and say, hey, like this happened. Can we work through this? And then we come up with a game or whatever to figure out to put them in a situation again so they can work at it. And just giving them that ownership and that being comfortable with you to be able to say that. Cause I think that's not very common, at least in our area, that it's the coaches in charge and I'm going to tell you what to do.
Yeah. We need more guides on the sides rather than the sages on the stages, as they say. Right. Like the guiding and helping players become their own best coaches. Oh, I could talk on that all day. I was watching a video about Yale rowing, and like that was the one big takeaway. It was like his entire goal was to help these people become their own best coaches and giving them the tools to do that. And then they just take off and they win national championships and regattas, and they're awesome. And the same thing is true with all of us. Like that's our job as parents and coaches, is to create independent people who understand that, hey, I may not have encountered the situation, or I've encountered the situation before. I can handle this. And that's where confidence for me, I think, comes in, and just building confident people. I'll take that all day. You know, at the end of the day, how many of our kids are actually get paid to play sports? How many are going to get paid to do something else? And how can you prepare them for life more than anything?
Absolutely.
So we've been talking a lot about the kids. You know, there's this important group called parents. I think we should probably touch on how can we help parents? You know, like there's one, the education that coaches can help with, but also just like can we on this conversation help parents understand what long-term development looks like? And maybe some of these people are caught in that rat race where it's go, 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 play, play, play. We're flying to South Carolina or Alaska or Vegas this weekend to play a tournament in the off season. Like, how can we help them best?
Yeah. So I'm obviously a teacher and a coach, and I referee as well. So pretty much every parent thinks they can do all of my jobs better than me. But I think one of the keys is I need to get parents on my side. So I need to engage parents a lot, and they're not the enemy. And a lot of times parents just want to be heard. So I don't have to agree. I don't have to do what they want me to do, but I always make sure that I listen. And then I try my best to explain what we're doing or why we're doing things. And I think that part of the education with parents is so important, because if parents watch me on the ice and my puck bag has tennis balls and a racquetball and a ringette ring, and we're playing games, we're playing tag, and kids are pretending that they're zombies, and they're like, what is this guy? He's out of his mind. Like, and there's a guy on the other side of the ice who is, the kids are stick handling through cones, and he's yelling at them and making them do push-ups after they miss a shot. And to them, it looks like, okay, this guy's got his stuff together and he's, you know, instructing my kids, when the reality is probably not as clear as it is. But I think that I have to describe to parents what we're doing and why we're doing it, and why this is vital to the learning process. And then once I do, they're pretty on board. We had an issue with actually run a house league this year, and I had some parents who had an issue with some of the things we were doing. And once I brought everyone in and had a meeting about why we're playing games at every station, why we're doing these things, because they were mad about, they said it was a lack of instruction. So once we had a long, and these are eight-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 7-year-olds. So once we had a long conversation, they kind of got it, and they were kind of on my side. And then I stopped getting all the emails. But yeah, it's super important. And I think it's really neglected. As a hockey parent that's gone through it with two kids now, up to 12U, the parents are pretty much out for the most part, at least in our club. So that's something we're going to work on this year.
I love that, how you're getting everyone on the same page and explaining what you're doing, because it's obviously not what most people expect is best for their child. You know, they think instruction is great, which, you know, it helps in some capacity. But, you know, when you're talking about, especially probably 9 and under, and you can even push that up probably a little bit further, like, it's just mimicking. Like, they don't understand what they're doing. Half the time their arms are flailing in a gazillion different directions. Like, how do we actually learn movement and movement patterns and what works best for our actual body? That's probably where you're able to pull in from your I always mispronounce this.
Kinesiology.
You know, pull off from that. So I'm curious, like, how do we actually learn to move, especially at those younger ages? And then as we're going up, you know, I always love the book, the Inner Game of Tennis. You can go out to hockeysarsenal.com/bookrex, bookrex, RECS. And I've got a bunch of book recommendations out there, but one of them is the Inner Game of Tennis. And it's like, how do we actually learn best movement? And it's an adult learning tennis, but just kind of like the idea of, don't worry about your elbow flailing out. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, what does it actually feel like? And, you know, at what age can you actually understand, you know, your athletic feel, your body? What does this feel like? Like, it's not at 8 and 9. Like, you can get a sense of it, but like truly grasping and learning, probably not there. So I'm curious from your perspective, again, long-term athlete development, kinesiology, you know, what does this actually look like? How do we learn these things?
So when they're little, so we're talking 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds, there's not a better way to learn, in my opinion, than play. So then learning through play, even 10, 11, 12 year olds, and just letting them figure it out. So when we learn to teach skills in PE or when I was in college, or even with the kinesiology stuff, it's how can you put the kids in an environment that are going to give them the most time and the most engaging way to practice their skill. So whether it's throwing and you're trying to get them to step with the opposite foot or whatever else, it's let's play a game where we're throwing at bowling pins and they're getting to throw the ball 100 times and try it 100 different ways and figure out what works best for them. And I'm not specifically telling them, hey, you're going to turn your body sideways. You're going to point with this hand. You're going to step. I might come by and say, hey, try stepping with this foot when you throw, and just give them an option. So if it's hockey, you know, you're like, hey, with a little kid, it's like, hey, you might need to slide your hand up your stick. You might need to slide your hand down. You might need to try to take a longer stride, and you can show them what that looks like and whatever. But I'm not specifically saying, hey, this is the technique. This is what you need to do, because a lot of my pet peeves with skating sometimes with kids are you'll teach technique in lines of skating, and then they'll go play a game and you'll see the kid go right back to that same technique he had before with the short choppy steps or whatever else. And so if we can put those kids in an environment where they have to use that skill to have success, like that's probably the best learning environment we can have. So I, in my own life, becoming an official was the best thing that ever happened to me skating wise. And I became a better skater as an adult, as an official, just by being put in that environment of having to have my head up to read and react to the play. You're skating forwards and backwards. You're using both edges. And that really changed the way that I teach skating. So putting the kids in that environment where they have to use the skill to have success is probably needs to be one of the main goals of any drill or game you're playing. Like, how can I put them in a situation where they have to use it and they're uncomfortable, but in a fun or engaging way? Because if they don't know they're using it, great. Like, that's even better for the little guys. If they're playing tag and they're on those edges and they're diving and falling and getting up and transitioning, like I don't think it's any better, but so yeah.
You're telling me lines and cones are not doing it. Like, we need to go beyond that a little bit.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Somebody, and I wish I knew who said this, but I can't think of who said it, but somebody said, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And so like, once you start playing these games and once you start using the representative design and the CLA, like, you can't unsee it. And it shows up in everything. Every time I watch my kids' baseball practice, every time, you know, I'm watching another teacher, like, it's, you can't unsee it. So it's the same way with skating. It's like, you're standing in a line and they're just going through the motions, like half speed. And it's like, this isn't really like, they're just trying not to fall down. They're not trying to push themselves. They're not trying to get better. They're not, it's kind of frustrating to watch sometimes.
I love that. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's so true. When you start to understand like what actual development looks like, and it's not in lines where people are going around a cone and they're not falling. Like, I had one player this year, I kept trying to push him. Like, you need to fall more. Like, you're not pushing the boundaries enough. And it just didn't, it never clicked. But like, the more of just like pushing into environments, even with that, still didn't push yourself enough, but still, like, most of the people, like, you do it and it automatically clicks and happens. They're pushing and they're falling over and they're laughing and they're smiling. Like, I had one player who was just a grumpy person. You know, he's a golfer, so of course. And we were just doing a simple mohawk. Like, there's a stick in the middle, I'm chasing you, and we're playing tag around the stick. Like, that this kid is 18 going on, or 17, 18 going on, 18, 19. And I've never seen him smile so much other than when he's talking about golf. Like, there's these beautiful, simple ways, and you can do tag. I mean, there's a million different ways to go about this, but oh my gosh, that was the best learning he ever got. And it was with a big ass smile on his face.
It was awesome. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have like learning and fun are not exclusive. Like, I think that's such a myth that's so many coaches are like, we have to get the work done before we can have fun. And it's like, buddy, the fun is the work. Like, that's where the real work happens. And that's really frustrating for me to have to sit and watch too.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the stages of coaching we can go into here. Like, you know, when coaches first start out, usually it's yelling everything and, you know, trying to correct. And especially like players that are turning into coaches, like, oh, the first thing they want to do is we're going to correct everything and we're going to become the champions of X, Y, and Z that we're in. And it's you know, hard stop after about a month of that, where it's like, okay, maybe I'm not going to just correct everyone overnight and we're all going to be perfect and, you know, every player's turning into Connor McDavid. So then, yeah. Then it comes into kind of like telling, okay, well, here's what you should kind of do, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually, and, you know, some people get through this really fast and some people it takes decades or they never get through it. And eventually they understand, maybe I should ask some questions instead. Maybe I should just figure out where they're at, help guide them to the next stage. Like, do we all forget what coach, like what the actual definition of coach is? It's basically something that gets you from point A to point B. Like, think about, oh, the stagecoach. You know, like the horse out there and you got the guy wrangling. I'm like, that's basically coaching. How can you help that player get from where they are now to where they want to be, or at least help them grow in other areas if they're not that interested and they're just out here because their parents want them to be out there, whatever it is. So I'm rambling a little bit here, but I'm just so passionate about the idea of like, what does an actual coach do? How do we evolve into the best person for the job? And I always say the first stage is just do no harm. Like, you probably don't know what you're doing yet. You haven't figured it out. You need to have more conversations like we're having today. How can we help people get into the do no harm phase and do well in that before they maybe start to see, okay, I can pull on these little things out of my learning and teaching tool belt? I think that would be super impactful.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, when I first started, I mean, it's probably been 15 years now that I've been coaching and teaching. And I mean, I was the hard ass that was going to show up and I was going to yell at everybody, and every kid was going to sit on their spot and listen to me. And I was going to have the best management of anyone that ever existed. And like you said, you just evolve and you kind of learn that I probably had more problems back then. I did have way more problems back then and way more stress than I do now. And but like you said, the do no harm. And I think there's a lot of guys doing harm at 8U, 10U, and not intentionally. I think 99% are not doing it intentionally. They just don't know better. And there's a lot of good guys that are in hockey that just coach the way they were coached. And they have this conception that they should, that kids have to learn this way. And I think as individual clubs, or even as USA Hockey, we have to like break those like strongly held myths, because people always joke around about teachers and their grades and how they're so passionate about their grades. And they, it's like an attack. If you attack a teacher's grade, like how they grade kids, it's the same way with hockey coaches. Like, if you're like, hey man, this 5-on-0 breakout is not going to do anything when you get into a game with 10-year-olds, that's complete chaos. You do this 5-on-0 for 30 minutes and it's like, and that's like attacking their character. Like, they're like, no, we have to learn the breakout. We have to do it this way. This is the way I did it in 1992. So I have to do it now, you know, like this. So breaking that down and be like, it's okay. Like, it's okay to learn more. It's okay to do some things that are a little bit outside of the box or that are going to help these kids learn better. And I don't know. It's a struggle for me for sure. Is coaches who are kind of unwilling to learn. You know, we had kind of that issue this year a little bit, and we would, drills would get ugly, games would get ugly, and then it would be, we got to stop. We got to move on. It's not clean. So getting them to understand the process of learning, and that we are working with children. Honestly, when it comes down to the end of the day, like, these are kids. Like, they sign up to play with their friends and play hockey and have fun. And if the best you can do is let them come out and play 3-on-3 and have a good time with their friends, then that's better than a lot of guys.
Yes. That's exactly. I mean, if you don't know what you're doing, just play games, let them compete against their friends and put them in those environments. And that might be what you want to do eventually when you're an expert at these things, and you're talking about constraints-led approach and understanding, like, how do we adjust things to force, you know, learning of whatever technique or tactic we're looking to do. But yeah, I mean, just 3-on-3, asking some questions. Like, my favorite is like the parent coach that comes out. Like, they don't know anything, you know, maybe they played football or something as a kid. And it's like, they ask, like, how can I be an effective coach? Let the kids play, and then I want you to try to learn. Like, what are they trying to do? Like, I want you to learn with the kid. When, like, you're both trying to learn, they're thinking, they're leading, they're doing all of these things that are going to help in their development personally and athletically. So, like, it's a win-win when you're just trying to be the learner rather than the teacher. Like, I think a lot of people, if they reframe their brain a little bit to saying, I'm a learner from these children and these kids, and I want to learn from them where they're at, what they're trying to do, learn the game through them. Oh my gosh. Like, I can't think of a better way. Like, you are better than 99.99% of people out there, and definitely better than 98% of the NHL coaches out there.
Some of the guys that never played hockey, that just were like, I got to coach because no one else is coaching, are way better for young kids than anyone else.
Oh, it's amazing. One of my favorite coaches of all time, like, never played the sport, just got into it because he thought it was cool. And he's just learning on the go and learning on the fly and just sharing his learnings and asking the players, like, oh, I learned this the other day. What do you think? Like, oh my gosh, like, he's amazing. And he coaches JV hockey out in Pennsylvania. Like, okay. But I mean, I can't think of a better person to be a steward of our nation's children.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Like, we have an issue with some guys in coaching 8U, 10U, and they're screaming and they're yelling and maybe that's how they were coached, but they have this idea that I have to be this, like, hard ass. That's like, because the kids aren't going to learn, they're not going to get better if I don't act this way. It couldn't be more wrong. It couldn't be more far from the truth. And I think in our area, at least our club is a perfect example. We have over 200 8U players. When we have a lot of Bantams too, but by the time they get to high school, there's not many left playing.
That's the sad part. You know, someone once told me a great line, and or maybe overheard it, but it was, you know, don't try to improve the kids, you know, let that happen. Just take care of them. You know, a lot of times the kids are coming up with better solutions than you can anyway. So just take care of the children, make sure they're in a safe environment, they're having fun, and the learning will take care of itself. I mean, that's the perfect do no harm. And you see that with some of the, like, the real geniuses out there. Like, you just don't want to mess with it. Like, oh, great thought process. Like, I just don't want to screw this up for this kid, because there's real genius that I didn't even think of. And it's awesome to see. So that's fantastic. Something else I wanted to talk about, and this is more pertinent to coaches more than anything, is just like adjusting to the resources that you have in practice. Like, for example, like, suddenly at the last minute, a goalie doesn't show. Like, how are you going to adjust? Like, how do you think about making adjustments? What are maybe an example or two you can have? Like, I know you'd posted a video about playing, I think it was 2-on-2 cross ice. They had a tire in the middle of the playing surface, hit the tire. Now you've got to go flip a cone to keep score. You know, there's a lot of cool things we can do where everything doesn't need to be perfect and ideal all the time.
Yeah. So I actually stole that from a game called Scoreboard Soccer. David Beard came up with that, and he's has a book and everything. And I just saw one of his videos, and it's, so yeah, we use tires. And what happens is the goal scorer has to leave. So the goal scorer leaves and completes a task, whether it's play tic-tac-toe, flip a cone. We had a bunch of different ones, but while the goal scorer is gone, it's an odd man situation. So the other team is getting the puck as quick as they can and then getting down the ice to hopefully take advantage of that situation before the goal scorer gets back. So it was a soccer thing, but I stole that, and it's great. And the kids absolutely, like, go crazy for it. But not having a goalie is kind of frustrating at times. I mean, we can use the tires, we can use the, you know, the shooter tutors or whatever, but I read some research, again, soccer related, the other day about goalies and how few soccer players are getting reps against goalies because they're having their own specialized training during practice. And that happens with us too. In hockey, where a goalie will leave and go to their goalie training or whatever. And I get it. But, and then kids don't get to see that those shots on goalies. So one of the things I've been experimenting with is using a chuck-a-puck. It's kind of heavy foam. You know, it's a little bit bouncy. And I'll let one of the kids play goalie because it's not going to hurt them. And they're diving all over the place. So now all these kids are getting the experience of shooting on someone in net. They're having to react to the person playing goal. They can't just shoot at a tire or at the shooter tutor in the same spot. Like they actually have to think where they're shooting or make or influence the goaltender in some way. Because that's pretty frequent where, you know, our club only had one goalie per team. So there's a lot of times we were without him. And so like, yeah, being pretty flexible on who shows up, on what equipment, you know, we're at different rinks and there's different equipment available. And so, yeah, it's super important to have a few tricks in your bag that you can use whenever you need it.
Yeah. I love that. Like, I know a lot of people who teach like shot blocking and they've got a bunch of tennis balls that they're using, like absolutely fantastic. So I love the old heavy chuck a puck foam. Like that's a great idea. Using a tire as a goal, like you can try to defend that. You know, do you try to sauce? Like there's so many things that come out of it. But I also do want to touch on one of our favorite drills in the hockey and soccer area, the rondo. Like I think there's nothing better than the rondo when it comes to teaching reading, pressure, playing keep away, you know, understanding sticks, and then also just like straight up compete. I mean, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. You probably saw that in soccer many times, the rondo, use it in hockey. I love that drill. I think it's like basically like a perfect strong side breakout. Like you can't pick a better thing to, you know, basically see and read, you know, what are, you know, what's kind of representative that you can do in a small area and over again, and get as many reps as you can to understand it.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I use it all the time as much as I can. I've seen an improvement in my own kids for sure. And they're not all hockey all the time. They play other sports and stuff. But the improvement we've seen by them skating with us and doing that, and just in the corner, you get 2-on-2 or 3-on-2, 3-on-1. I mean, there's a million variations. This many passes is a point. If you cause a turnover, you get a point, whatever. And then we compete with it too. So, you know, 5 passes in a row, you get a point. Losers are doing pushups or skating or whatever else. And it's more fun and they get after it. And if you can see the, like I said, in the corner, like the movement is so similar to the game, that it's so valuable, even as a warm up for a game or whatever, just to get the kids moving and thinking. And it's very simple to understand. It's very simple to explain. So it doesn't take, like you said, I don't need the whiteboard for that. Hey, we're going to play, it's going to be 3-on-1, 5 passes is a point, and we're going to play for, you know, put a timer up for 8 minutes and that's what we're going to do.
Massive fan on that kind of stuff. And just for those people that don't understand rondo, it's basically monkey in the middle. You know, you got 3 players on the outside, 1 in the middle, could be doing around kind of like a face-off circle or quarter of the ice or 6 of the ice. And you got 4-on-2, 5-on-3, you know, whatever numbers, where it's just basically kind of like playing keep away with players in the middle. You can do bumper. You can make it look like a power play. There's so many variations on it. It's the simplest though would be three on like the outside area, 1 in the middle, and just the player goes one way past the other direction. And it's a great activity for, I would say, like squirt level 10U's to start understanding the skills, because they have enough capability to actually complete a pass but also read. So I absolutely love that one.
They do for sure. But I also make sure that they have to be moving. Like I hate the, like, I don't like the standing still version, because when they stand still, it's not really realistic. They're just standing still and their opponent or their teammate is standing still. So they're passing the same spot. Like we want them to pick their head up and make that read. So I've thrown like big mats, like pads in the middle and where it's in the way. So they're having to move around those pads and stuff just to make sure that they are moving. Because I think if they're not moving, if it is the, you know, the traditional monkey in the middle where your teammate is standing still, you're not getting the most value that you could be getting.
Love it. Man, there's so many ways to go from here, but maybe we should save it for next time. Is there anything you want to make sure that we cover beyond what we've talked about? This has been chock full of actual items, which I absolutely love and adore. The way that I kind of try to run things is how much value can we put in the shortest amount of time. So I really appreciate your expertise and coming on and talking about all this.
Oh yeah, man. I love the conversation.
All right, sir. You have a wonderful day. Hockey IQ newsletter, podcast. Everyone needs to subscribe to it, but where can we find Chris Sevier?
I guess, yeah, reach out to me on Twitter at CSevs19. And I love talking hockey and coaching and anything else in that area.
Yeah. Do you have an email or anything that we can find you at the school or, you know, I feel like everyone talks about the Instagram coach, but I think you'd be a good one to actually follow on Instagram. Or are you just a Twitter guy?
So far I'm just Twitter. At some point I probably should take video. I'm a little weird about videotaping other people's kids. So I probably got to get past that. And
yeah, that's fair. That's fair though. We can understand that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, but I would like to probably do that in the future and create a little bit more content around kind of what I do and explaining what I do. So yeah, that's definitely down the road.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thanks so much, man. See ya.
All right. See you later.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch your beauts here next week for a brand new episode.